Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The world is rapidly changing and not in a good way. International law and global institutions are being gutted. Negotiating in good faith is now an alien concept. The unprovoked war on Iran is a case in point, though other examples abound. The international order is devolving. Crosstalking Global Disorder, I'm joined by my guest, Giorgio Cafiero in Washington. He is CEO of Gulf State Analytics. In Tehran, we have Foresta Sadeghi. She is a freelance journalist and political analyst. Also in Iran, we have Alam Salah. He is a senior lecturer in international relations at the Australian National University. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alam, let me go to you first. I'm calling this program New Dystopia. So what do we have on the agenda as we speak around the world? We have genocide, we have unprovoked attacks, we have fake negotiations, all coming from one part of the world, instigating all of these things here. The global order that we knew that was invented after the Second World War has basically disappeared. We've 80 years of international law, humanitarian law, is virtually non-existent now. Why? Because the same countries that instituted it no longer follow it. Go ahead.
Well, it seems like after two centuries of Western hegemony in international world order, or in other words, the Western world order that has been dominating the international relations, now is declining and it's moving towards the non-Western world. And that means that the emerging global powers are closing or narrowing the gap between the West and the rest, and that means the militarily, politically, economically, technologically, in terms of science, other parts of the world are moving to challenge the Western-led international order. The question or the problem is that this is quite natural and it's happening gradually. The question is what we have been witnessing in the past 2 years or so, that the West is not only declining in terms of power, but also in terms of morality and ethical issues, in terms of war in Gaza and the recent war, unprovoked war against Iran, which is illegal, which is, according to the international law, it should be condemned fully by those who have created this international law. The West, that claims that they are the leader of the free world, is not only it has not been condemned, but it's been supported in so far as the United States supports it blindly, and the German politicians call it a dirty war that Israel is doing it on our behalf. This is something that should be noticed.
You're absolutely right. That's why the German chancellor's nickname on this program is called Dirty Fred. And I will use it as long as he is chancellor. Dirty Fred. Foresta, one of the interesting things, a lot of parallels have been made to the war against the Iraqi, legal war against Iraq in 2003, and what is going on right now with Iran. There are a lot of similarities, obviously, but there's one glaring exception. The Bush administration, for months and months and months, convinced, propagandized the American people. It had the coalition of the willing, that's where the term came from, to start this legal war against Iraq on behalf of Israel. We don't see any of that now. The West doesn't even try to legitimize its aggression around the world. We had these negotiations, so-called negotiations with the United States and Iran. They were a fraud. They were fake. But the same thing was the case with Russia and Ukraine and United States. They were a fake as well. I mean, fakery is their calling card. Go ahead, in Tehran.
It seems that in the case of the George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq, at least I remember Secretary Colin Powell back then, he had a small jar in his hand at the UN Security Council. As you said, he tried to justify it. But the point about Iran is that they just came, they just attacked, and then They didn't try to justify it. They just said that Israel has the right, has the every right to protect itself. Protect itself against what? I say that it seems that as if you have a knife at home and somebody suddenly raids and storms into your house and says that because you have a knife, it means that you want to kill your neighbor. Oh, come on. You can't make decision on the nations and on a big country such as Iran with 85 million population like that. It's not accepted. But the point about it is that the Western ideals and the Western human rights or, I don't know, democratic values, it seems that it works for them and whoever is their client regime. And when you are out of their sphere, when you are isolated for decades by themselves, you've been kept out of the door and you've not been allowed to go in, and then they start to attack you for no reason. And I think it's totally unacceptable. And I hope that not the Western countries, because nobody can rely on Western countries and nobody can trust them anymore, but other nations in the world, in Central Asia, in Africa, in other Asian countries, even Gulf Arab countries, I hope that they come to their senses that enough is enough. One day or another day, it would be their turn.
Yeah, if there's a lot of threats out there. There's a lot of cajoling, blackmailing. It's very, very difficult to get away from a hegemon. I agree with Alam's initial comments. I mean, slowly but surely, it's changing. I mean, that's why we have this disorder right now. Giorgio, one of the outcomes of this unprovoked attack on Iran is that now it is made obsolete and the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the IAEA, the OPCW. I could go on and on with the alphabet, okay? But this is, why would any country now want to turn to the IAEA for protection? You want to be protected from the IAEA now. Giorgio.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on your show. It's always an honor to be a guest here on Crosstalk. I certainly understand what you're saying. I completely agree with your point. I think that it's going to take a long time for us to fully appreciate the longer term consequences of Israel's unprovoked and frankly barbaric war on Iran, as well as the U.S. military strikes on Iran. I definitely think that what we can expect is not only for Iran to possibly withdraw from the NPT, but for other countries in the global south to come to the conclusion that they need to establish deterrence capacity.
Yeah.
I think countries not only in the Middle East or the Islamic world, but really all over the global south, took many lessons from this conflict between the American-Israeli alliance and Tehran. And yeah, I definitely think one of the victims of the warfare last month will be the cause of nuclear nonproliferation in the world.
Yeah, but Giorgio, if I can stay with you, there's one way out. Israel should abide by the NPT, and it should be investigated and reviewed by the IAEA. That's one way out, and I think these two institutions would be saved. But that's not going to happen, is it?
No, I think obviously in a world that would be more fair, more equal, that's what would happen. But realistically, Israel is not going to give up its nuclear weapons arsenal. The U.S. will never put any pressure on Israel to do so. So this is the reality in the Middle East right now. Israel has an arsenal of nuclear weapons, and it thinks that no other country in the region should have any nuclear weapons. And I think, well, as I said, one of the consequences of Israel's unprovoked aggression against Iran could very well be Iran determining that its security interests are not advanced by staying in the NPT.
Let me go to Alam. In reference to what Giorgio just said, I mean, why in the world wouldn't Iran want to have a nuclear deterrent now? That seems obvious to me.
Well, yes, Iran has all the reasons to acquire a nuclear deterrence, especially when it's invaded unprovokedly by two nuclear powers, United States and Israel, illegally. But Iran has always maintained that they don't want a nuclear bomb. They want a nuclear technology for peaceful purposes, and they want this, and this is the right, this is what any developing countries needs in order to acquire other scientific advantages for the nuclear technology. But the problem is that Israel and United States, as it seems like they, it's not only they are targeting Iran's nuclear facilities, is they are not only targeting Iran's military power or facilities, but they are targeting the Iranian civilization.
Exactly.
They are not targeting even the Islam, they are not even targeting Islamic Republic. They are targeting the country, people, history of Iran. They don't want a powerful Iran. It's not is what's happening. Indeed, if they really wanted to refrain Iran from acquiring a nuclear bomb, the 2015 nuclear agreement, the so-called JCPOA, could kind of guarantee that Iran will be far, far away from the nuclear bomb. But they have
the days of the JCPOA are over right now because Iran has been attacked. So you can't win with these people.
Yes.
You can't win. You stay in it, you lose. The U.S. Leaves it, Iran loses. This is the proposition they're giving the world, particularly Iran.
Exactly. Iran was actually attacked soon after President Trump had withdrawn from the agreement in 2018 by imposing the so-called maximum pressure policy, by killing Iranian scientists and nuclear scientists, by the damages they have, Israel has made in Iranian nuclear sites, which were under the international kind of observation.
Okay, so I have to jump in here. I'm sorry, we have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the new global disorder state with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing global disorder. Okay, let's go back to Fereste in Tehran. One of the other objects, targets of this Western aggression, which again, what we said in the first part of the program, they don't even try to legitimize it through international law or morality or history. They don't care anymore, okay? They feel that they have the might, and because they have the might, they have the right to do. The rules-based order, well, that was quickly forgotten, wasn't it? But to the point here, another target of all of this is the BRICS countries. This is something where the Trump administration has had a lot of issues with, and the Global South is rallying around Iran. It's very clear. If you go outside of the Western world, Iran came out on top of all of this morally. Go ahead.
Before answering your question, I just want to make a point about what Alam said in the previous half of the program. He said that Iran's nuclear program was under total supervision of the IAEA and the Western world following the 2015 nuclear deal with them. But the point about it is that in 2018, we had assassination of nuclear scientists. So we can say even back then, the deal that they had made and they wanted to so-called supervision, even back then, it was just to put the pressure on the Iranians not to make any move out of the way that they had designed about Iran. But back to your question, I think the relationship between Iran, China, and Russia is one of the things or one of the points that I feel that it irritates the United States,
yep.
And especially the E3, the United Kingdom, Germany, and France, overall the NATO organization, which they are in fight with Russia militarily and with China somehow between China and the United States. So it has been always a point to pressure Iran. Some days ago, I saw a video of an Iranian ambassador in the UK. He was just explaining, or he was just trying to explain to the UK lawmakers, to British lawmakers, why Iran was cooperating with Russia. And it was said that it was a defense deal between Russia and Iran over the drones that Iran provided and gave the technology, gave the Russia the technology. But they were just asking Iran, and they were accusing Iran of cooperating with Russia. You know, if I were in the shoes of that, I mean, ambassador, I would say that's none of your business because you yourself.
Well, I mean, wouldn't if you were the ambassador being questioned like that, wouldn't you ask the UK authorities, so why are you giving weaponry to Ukraine? I mean, it's the same. But they can't conceive of that. Giorgio, that's one of the problems we have right now, is that all of the things that Iran is accused of, Russia is accused of, China, is the West does it itself. It cannot, it dare not look at itself in a mirror, because what it will see is ugly. Giorgio.
Well, this brings us to an important point, is that in the West, we hear statesmen talk all the time about the international rules-based order, the liberal rules-based order. We hear those terms all the time. But when you look at the way so many of these policymakers in the U.S. and European countries and the U.K. responded to Trump's strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities and the Israeli war on Iran last month, you know, there was no condemnation. And this goes to show that the so-called liberal rules-based order and international law, while sometimes they overlap, these are not the same things. The rules-based order requires the West's adversaries to abide by international law, but not the West or Western allies such as Israel. But at the end of the day, there's no purpose to international law unless every country is required to Exactly. abide by it. And therefore, these Western leaders really have no moral standing when they support this aggression against Iran, completely illegal, completely unprovoked, when they try to hold the West's adversaries to standards that they don't want to hold their own countries to. The hypocrisy is just so obvious.
Alam, we've focused a lot on the unprovoked attacks on Iran, but what about the genocide in Gaza? The same issues apply, okay? There is a genocide convention, but nobody in the West seems to have heard of it. Go ahead.
Well, a country that invaded Iran almost 2 weeks ago to stop Iran acquiring nuclear bomb has at least 200 nuclear heads in its storages. And the country that invaded Iran and hoping and declaring that they want to free Iranians and to liberate Iranians actually are accused by the international criminal courts and International Court of Justice as being acting in a war crime and the genocide, and indeed the one who has signed the invasion of Iran himself, Prime Minister Netanyahu, is wanted by international war crime himself. So the problem is that the world is moving towards the West-less world order, and the West has all the right to resist this change and transformation, but they have no right to move behind morality, legality, and ethical issues. What's going on is not only that the Western powers is declining, but also we are seeing a kind of a decline of morality and ethical issues, double standard hypocrisy in Western policies towards the rest of the world. Iran has the right to maintain a peaceful nuclear technology, and it's been observed by international organizations. Israel has a nuclear bomb, and there is no international observation or investigations whatsoever, only because they can get away with it. It doesn't necessarily mean that Israel is right. Israel has been killing at least 15,000 children in the past 2 years or so in Gaza, and that nobody in the West has even condemn this. They did not stop this.
They won't even use the G word. They won't even say that, okay? That's how vacuous their morality is. Firesta, tell us how Iran has changed, because I think it's quite obvious to all of us and our viewers is that the unprovoked attack was intended for regime change. Well, that didn't happen, okay? Apparently, they'd been planning it for 2 years. Well, in 2 years, they couldn't figure out that just attacking Iran isn't going to be enough. How has the country changed? And I think we're all painfully aware, acutely aware, that this conflict is far from over. How has Iran changed since then?
It seems that Iranians went through a storm that suddenly fell on them. So it was, you can say, a 12-day, special 12 days. But at the same time, they tried to remain united. And this unity among the Iranians and this unity among the Iranians and the rulers and the Islamic Republic, I think it was very precious. And we know that it is, again, it is the calm before the next storm. At the same time, it seems that somehow authorities are feeling that those negotiations that they had with the United States, especially with E3, they have not worked. They couldn't prevent any war. Actually, they facilitated the war. They were some sort of fake operation to convince the Iranians that everything is back on track, everything is going on well. And suddenly, boom, we heard the explosions in Tehran. So it seems that Iranians are more cautious now. Actually, today, Wednesday, I heard from Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi that for the time being, Iran doesn't consider holding or returning to negotiating table with the United States. It doesn't mean that they will never, ever return to the table, but it seems that their conditions and their look at the situation has changed. In addition, that they are now revising their policies regarding cooperation with certain international agencies. On the top of them, on the top of the list, actually, is the International Atomic Energy Organization, the IAEA. And after that, even it could be the United Nations Security Council, and some other organizations which the Western countries are dominating them.
Well, you know, Giorgio, I mean, just our two Iranian guests here are perfect examples of what I've observed for a very long time. Iranians are very pragmatic, basically very, very calm. They use common sense, but that's not what we're told in the West, okay? They're angry people, okay? They're violent people. This is what we're fighting against, and this is what the West uses, this colonial mentality that, you know, you can't deal with these people. But it's just the opposite, isn't it?
Well, you're absolutely right that many officials here in Washington will sort of depict Iran as a country ruled by religious fundamentalists making irrational decisions. But for those of us as analysts who actually study Iranian foreign policy, I think it's very clear that the leadership in Tehran, whether people agree or disagree with the country's foreign policy decisions, these decisions do reflect rationality and careful and measured ways of dealing with challenges to Iran in the region and on the international stage. I certainly think that when we look at everything that unfolded in the region last month and the way in which Iran responded to Israel's war on the country, as well as the American military strikes, this was just a continuation of Iran being very measured, very careful, and trying to advance its own interests, not always having all the cards, and also dealing with the fact that it was attacked by the most powerful military in the world, the United States, and the most powerful military in the region, Israel. Also, Iran was not really receiving much support in concrete terms from around the world. You brought up the fact that there was a lot of solidarity with Iran from societies, mostly in non-Western countries. Very true, not saying that solidarity doesn't matter, but in terms of direct, concrete support, Iran was largely alone, if truth be told. And like I said, Iran did not necessarily have many great
cards. Well, Giorgio, we've run out of time, but I'd like to just say Iran stood up to the collective West, and it's still standing. And that is really important. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Iran and in Washington. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.